The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and criminalize marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. It is Monday, February 1st, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the next 60 minutes of news, interviews, comedy, music, and more, all by, for, and about the cannabis community. We are so glad to have you here. If this is your first time, welcome. If you are a returning visitor, thanks for coming on back. I'm Radical Russ Belville, coming to you live from beautiful Potland, Oregon. It's not a typo, it's a way of life. And 90 miles away, up in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my co-host, good friend, and half-half-sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, Russ. Can you hear me loud and clear?
I think we can hear you loud and clear. I'm going to boost you a little bit on the mic there. Let's see how that sounds. How is everything for you today in Astoria, Oregon?
Everything's good. We're switching out some computers, so we'll see how the show goes today. Hopefully tomorrow we'll have a nice new computer in here, and it'll sound great.
Oh, great. We had the Normal Show Live special birthday party edition Saturday night down at the Cannabis Cafe. A lot of the folks here that are watching the show now were there, and we want to thank all of you for joining us for the party show. The party show was a special gift just to those listeners who were watching it live. We did not archive it. We did not record it. And it was a shame because we had such a great performance from Human, from the Human Revolution. He sat in and did three songs on acoustic guitar. And Carrie, I got to tell you, my favorite one is his Michael Jackson cover of
The Thriller. Tremors,
because these are Tremors. Oh, my God. That was hilarious.
You know, he was great, and I was mesmerized by his performance. That was so much fun, Russ. Happy birthday again.
Oh, yes. The whole room was just entranced watching him play. And what was really fun, too, is he got into the chat room, too. He's looking up while he's playing, and he can read what people are saying up on the big screen for the chat room. So that was a whole lot of fun. For you know, new folks out there, Cannabis Carrie takes care of our news, which just comes right after this next break. What are some of the headlines we're looking at today, Carrie?
Well, today we're going to look at Denver dispensaries that are having a little problem with their business plans. We're talking about a tragic story that happened in Mexico this weekend. And I've kind of skirted around it, but today I'm going to talk about it. We're going to talk about Starbucks.
Oh, no, not Starbucks. Okay. We'll get to that. Here in the Pacific Northwest, folks, you got to understand coffee is probably the second most interesting drug up here. So we'll be talking about that. Also coming up in the show today, we will be speaking with Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of Normal. He joins us on the first Monday of every month to give us the forecast for reform in that month. And 2010 is going to be a very, very busy year. All the legislatures are in session. They're all, a lot of them are looking at marijuana legislation, whether it be decriminalization or legalization or medical marijuana. So we're going to take a look at all of that with Alan St. Pierre. And then at about 1:45 Pacific, 4:45 Eastern, we'll be playing some recorded audio that we got from Thursday a special bloggers-only conference call with the proponents of the Tax Cannabis 2010 initiative in California that would legalize marijuana for all adults. We're speaking with Richard Lee, the founder of Oaksterdam University and the proponent of the Tax Cannabis 2010 initiative, and Doug Linney, who's in charge of the campaign down there. So that's coming up at the bottom of the show here. We'll be right back. It's Normal Show Live.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal.
Life ain't a box of chocolates gum. That's why people smoke weed and take bumps and drink way too damn much and get drunk and do it all over again.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do
it. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
If you own a medical marijuana dispensary, you might have trouble finding a bank you can do business with in Colorado. Dispensary owners are reporting in Denver that Wells Fargo & Company is virtually the only bank in Colorado willing to take their business. Now it seems that even they have turned their backs on the dispensary industry. Christy Brum, a spokeswoman for the banking giant, said that Wells Fargo is examining state and federal laws to determine what the bank's risk is in working with dispensaries. For now, Wells Fargo has stopped opening new accounts for the medical marijuana dispensaries. Their move, according to the Denver Post, reflects a broader uneasiness among banks in the state about working with the medical marijuana industry. Ryan Vincent, who owns a dispensary in Denver, worries that the dispensaries might lose a key ally in their business plans. He says that virtually every dispensary he knows uses Wells Fargo as its bank, largely because the industry has received a cold shoulder from other financial institutions. Tim Powers, a spokesman for the Colorado Bankers Association, agreed that it is unusual for banks to turn away potential customers, but he said legal and regulatory considerations have made many banks uncomfortable working with dispensaries. Federal law requires that banks do not do business with companies operating illegally, and marijuana distribution, for medical purposes or not, is still illegal federally. Regulators have said to use caution, and the banks are now being ultra-conservative. This move could deprive dispensaries of needed stability and possibly force them to operate in shadowy, cash-heavy ways. It's a difficult position for the dispensaries trying to operate a legitimate, above-board business.
Well, this is very interesting. This goes along with another movement that's been going on a lot lately in progressive circles, moveyourmoney.info, the idea of moving money out of these big, big banks and taking them to smaller community banks or credit unions. I certainly support something like that, and I support that among the dispensary owners. You know, find the local banks, find the local credit unions that will take your business and bank with them. And I really feel that, you know, a lot of these people are we're missing the boat here. It's not a question anymore about if marijuana is going to be re-legalized. It's when marijuana is going to be re-legalized. And there are so many businesses that could benefit from one of the few growth industries that we have left in the United States of America anymore. I mean, when you look at, for example, print publishing, you know, newspapers and magazines and so on, they're all in the tank. They're all dying. They cannot get enough advertising on their pages. And the only ones that are surviving are the independent weeklies that take advertising from the dispensaries in Colorado and California. 9 pages of print advertisement in the last Denver Westward, I believe it was. And magazines, the glossy magazines like High Times Magazine is doing great as far as advertising goes. Cannabis Culture, West Coast Cannabis, the newspapers like West Coast Leaf, the Hemp News up in the Pacific Northwest. Now Kush, Colorado has come out. You can't drop a stick in a head shop anymore without hitting 9 or 10 different magazines that are on the shelves. So cannabis consumers, let's think about this. Let's start forming our own cannabis-friendly businesses. Why couldn't some of these dispensary owners band together and form some sort of dispensary owners credit union? You know, we've told the stories before about the medical marijuana patients that get denied organ transplants because they turn up positive for THC, and yet all these organ banks are more than willing to take our organs, even if they turn up positive for THC. So they'll take the organs from the potheads, right? But they won't give the organs to the potheads. Well, that's just not right. Why don't we form our own organ banks that we only for potheads and by potheads? How about services lists? I mean, how many people would like to call a maid or an electrician or a plumber, especially an electrician if you're trying to do an indoor grow, and you want to know that service guy isn't going to narc you off to the cops? Wouldn't it be great if we had something like a Craigslist just for marijuana-friendly businesses, marijuana-friendly services, you know, Mary Jane's babysitter service? I mean, these are things to think about. Our money has power, and we no longer need to hide in the shadows anymore when it comes to our business acumen and what we like to do.
And a very sad story out of Juarez, Mexico. On Sunday, gunmen burst into a birthday party of teenagers at a private home and opened fire into the crowd. The motive remains unclear, but investigators are now saying it looks like a case of mistaken identity. Those interviewed at the scene said the teens had nothing to do with drugs, and the style of shootings is consistent with the powerful drug gangs in the border city of Juarez. The victims, all students who grew up together, were peacefully attending a birthday party in a private home. The shootings left 14 people dead. 10 of the deaths were victims under 19 years old. At least 14 others, most of them teens, were wounded and remain hospitalized. At a news conference today, Juarez Mayor Jose Reyes Ferez offered a reward of $76,000 for information leading to the killers. The local paper that has been documenting the rash of killings that began in January 2008 had a headline that read, "The Saddest Day in Juarez." It comes just weeks after President Felipe Calderon sent 2,000 U.S.-trained federal police officers to help restore order in the city. They joined about 7,000 soldiers and other local and state authorities to take on the cartels in Juarez, fighting to control drug distribution routes leading to the United States. It's the world's largest drug-consuming market. Now, Juarez is just across the Rio Grande from El Paso.
Well, 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 a sad story with all these teenagers getting massacred by the Mexican drug gangs, and I'm going to riff off of what the blues guy is saying in the chat room here, which is another piece of proof of the DEA's success. President Obama has just nominated Michelle Leonhardt. She's the deputy administrator of the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration. She's a holdover from the Bush administration. She has been the acting DEA administrator for quite some time now, at least a year or possibly longer than that. So Obama has decided that the lady who was just heading up the DEA under Bush should head up the DEA under Obama. And why I bring this up is because it goes to what Blues Guy was saying in the chat room here. And that is a piece that we reported on back last year when asked about the Mexican deaths that are going on south of the border in this horrendous drug war. Now probably 13,000, 14,000 people that have been killed. in this Mexican drug war. When asked about that, Michelle Leonhardt said, well, that's just a sign of our success. That's just a sign that the president of Mexico clamping down on these drug gangs is causing them to get desperate. The violence is just a sign of their success. So a whole bunch of dead Mexican teenagers must be another sign of the DEA's success. This is why I bring the drug war up every day, why I do the work that I do. You know, some people will talk to me and they'll say, what do you do? And I'm like, well, I'm a marijuana activist. I'm like, oh my God, smoking pot. You just want to get high. Why don't you do something, you know, try to end discrimination against gay people? Or why don't you try to, you know, help poverty or deal with AIDS victims? Or could you find something more interesting or more meaningful to do, trying to end hunger or whatever? Well, look. Those items have plenty of people standing up for them. This one, marijuana law reform, gets the snickers, gets the laughs. Like that a guy in West Virginia who's in the delegation, who's an actual elected representative, who has his colleagues making fun of him and holding a joint to their lips because he dares to introduce a medical marijuana bill. We're the one that needs someone fighting for him, and that's what I'm here to do, is fight for this, but not just for us, and not because we like to get high, although maybe a lot of us do. It's because this affects America and Americans, even people that don't smoke marijuana, and it affects the world. Those teenagers having a nice little party in Juarez, Mexico, are dead because our federal government won't allow us to grow marijuana for our own personal use. End of story. The Mexican drug gangs make 60 to 70% of their profits shipping Mexican brick weed into the states that are so draconian against medical marijuana and marijuana legislation, your interior states there in the plains and Texas and all of that, that the Mexican brick weed makes up 60 to 70% of their profits. That's how they're able to buy the guns. That's how they're able to bribe the police and the law enforcement officials. And that's what leads to these massacres where all these teenagers are getting killed. It's time that we let us grow our own. We would be perfectly happy putting the Mexican drug growers, the Mexican marijuana growers, out of business.
Okay, here we go. Starbucks has been making news in the cannabis sphere lately. First, proponents in Colorado are calling for a nationwide boycott of Starbucks because they say the Seattle-based coffee company supports an organization that is trying to thwart the use of cannabis for medical purposes. Now, Mason Tavert, head of SAFER, that Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation, held a news conference in front of a Denver Starbucks to draw attention to what it says are ties between the company and the Colorado Drug Investigators Association. The problems began with the Colorado Drug Investigators, a law enforcement organization that is against marijuana, including medical marijuana. They put a Starbucks logo on their website. Tavert said in his news conference, it's no surprise that law enforcement organizations and their leaders, whose jobs are dependent on maintaining the war on marijuana, are lobbying to kill state-licensed medical marijuana dispensaries. But Starbucks and other companies' funding of this war should strike any marijuana consumer or reform supporter as truly appalling. It's time to stand up and send them all a message. Now, Starbucks had responded saying that the effort was misguided because the company does not provide financial support of the law enforcement group. Okay, well, now Starbucks is in the news again, this time because the Office of National Drug Control Policy posted on their website that there were more medical marijuana dispensaries than Starbucks in San Francisco. The website is boasting that there are 98 dispensaries and only 71 Starbucks coffee shops in the city. They even provided a Google Map mashup on their website showing the supposed locations of both. But it looks like the feds, once again, are fudging the numbers to make the movement look bad. First, the map is not clickable, so you can't zoom in to determine exact addresses. And even so, there appears to be dispensaries listed in highly improbable places. Now, San Francisco's Department of Public Health, which issues the permits for medical marijuana dispensaries, is also befuddled by the federal data. It was extremely incorrect, said Larry Kessler, a senior health inspector at the department. Now, the DPH lists 24 dispensaries in the city that either have permits or are trying to obtain one. The Federal Drug Office says that their information includes those dispensaries plus dozens more that are unregulated yet easily findable through a Google search by any teenager. Raphael Latmeyer, a spokesman for the Office on National Drug Control Policy, called the state's medical marijuana law, you love this, Russ, here's his quote, essentially a fraud that's been perpetrated on the people of California because of the potential for abuse.
Oh, yes, the old fraud. You know, it's always interesting whenever we do a coffee story, I always look back at that chart that Penningfield did for the National Institutes of Drug Abuse that showed the addictive qualities of caffeine and marijuana were just about the same as far as how severe they were. Interesting how two different drugs that are about the same in addictiveness level can have two completely different business models. Thanks, Carrie, for the news. We'll be right back with your Toker Tunes.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would tell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
There is a peaceful solution called a peace revolution. And now let's take back America.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Like millions of freedom-loving Americans, I'm a marijuana smoker, and I don't think that should be any of the government's business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. The next time you light up, take the time to let your elected officials know how you feel. It's time we legalize marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at normal.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by PlanetFantastic.com and Bella Blue Tie-Dye Fashions. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune. Oh, we love it when we get across to Roots Monday. Love all of these Roots tunes. And Cannabis Carrie, in addition to doing our news every day of the week on Mondays, brings us our Roots Monday tune. You can catch her own radio shows up at coastradio.org. Carrie works up there in Astoria on community radio, playing folk and all sorts of great stuff up there. And check out her website, which is cannabisfantastic.com. Cannabisfantastic.com, cultured cannabis for the cultured cannabis consumer. So, Carrie, what do we got on tap for tunes today?
Well, today, our Roots Monday Toker Tune, we get to hear some good old-fashioned Americana with some homespun reefer jazz by the band The Two Man Gentleman Band. The song to start out our week is aptly titled, Me, I Get High on Reefer. Now, the two gentlemen in question are bassist Fuller Condon and Andy Bean. It's part swing, part vaudevillian, and their infectious energy makes it 100% fun. Andy Bean pounds out intricate rapid-fire chord changes and melodies on an assortment of antique four-string guitars and banjos, and bassist Fuller Condon dances around the fingerboard with a punchy, driving style that renders a drummer unnecessary. They have played for at least 3 years around the country, honing in the art of the live show and catching the attention of big names like Bob Dylan and Willie Nelson, for whom the Gents opened for a few shows last summer. This song is sure to be a classic on Russ's magical music wheel that he spins before and after Normal Show Live. You can check out their website at thetwogentlemen.com for more music comedy and see if they're playing anywhere in your area. Their live shows look like they're a blast, so if they're playing near you, please go check them out.
All right, here we go with me. I one, get high two, four, on one, reefer. Three, four.
Some people get high on music. Some folks get high on life. Some girls get high about getting husbands. Some husbands get high when the wife's not looking. Some folks get high on being downhearted. They love to moan and weep. Me, I get high on reefer.
Reefer.
Then I fall asleep. And I dream about an island in the Caribbean.
Holding hands
with you
beside the sea.
And I wonder, who do you dream about when you put that reefer in your mouth? In my dream, you dream of me.
Two-man gentleman band. Thank you, gentlemen, with their song, Me, I Get High on Reefer. All right, a little great straight from the Daily Toker Tunes Roots Monday.
Only come twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, it's time to check our cannabis community calendar, which is available at norml.org/calendar. And I would read this immediately if the internet would cooperate, and it does not wish to. But Reverend Ray Green had some information he wanted to get out for everyone in the state of Iowa with regard to their hearings. The state of Iowa's Board of Pharmacy has been required to come up with hearings to determine the medical efficacy of cannabis. And this hearing that is going to take place is going to evaluate whether cannabis should be removed from Schedule 1 and moved on down to Schedule 2 or lower in the state of Iowa. There's been a rescheduling of this event and a new venue that they're looking at. So we'll have to get that information up on the chat room here in just a moment. Also up on our agenda at calendar or normal.org/calendar, the Southfield Compassion Club will be having a meeting there in Southfield, Michigan. Check out southfieldcompassion@gmail.com. On Thursday, the University of New Hampshire Normal is having their meeting. This will take place at MUB room 334. For more information, send me an email at stash@normal.org. Also on Thursday, February 4th, Philly Normal is having their open meeting at the A Space at 3422 Baltimore Avenue in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Check out phillynormal.org for details. We've got a winter meeting taking place in Cincinnati, Ohio for Miami Valley Normal. Check out mvnormal.org for details. Kansas City Normal is also having a meeting on Saturday, February 6th. kcnormal.org for the information. And Winterfest 2010 is taking place, but The calendar's not telling me where. We're going to have to get that updated so we can get that information to you. For more, including websites, email addresses, phone numbers, and every bit of information you need for these events, check out the Normal calendar of events at normal.org/calendar. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. And at the bottom of the hour, Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of Normal.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
Starfish Design, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Founded in 1970, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is the oldest, largest, and most popular lobby of cannabis users in the world. From our Washington, D.C. offices, we lobby our federal government. And from our chapters nationwide, we lobby our state and local governments to end the war on American citizens who choose to use cannabis responsibly. We take you now to our nation's capital for a visit with Executive Director Alan St. Pierre and a look at this month in Normal.
All right, all the way to Washington, D.C., Alan St. Pierre joins us at 4:30 Eastern Time. Alan, welcome to the show.
Good day, Russ.
A little bit of Holst from the planets there for an introduction for you, my man.
I would guess so. I'm floored.
I'm glad you like it. So we were talking about this, you know, in the chats and many times before you and I have addressed this in email of how busy 2009 was and that 2010 is just going to leave it in the dust. What are we looking forward to here as a preview for February in state houses and the federal Congress all throughout the land here?
Well, there's six or seven things on my item, and no doubt that state legislation leads. We have at least 15 to 20 states that by the end of the month will have either medical marijuana bills, decriminalization, legalization, or hemp, industrial hemp legislation. So my guess is by the time we get to about April, we should have 25 states with about 40 bills pending. So February is the time when these bills all start to get assigned numbers, committees, etc. Some of the earlier stuff we did in January was with bills that were pre-filed in 2009, but now we're just starting to hit the sweet spot of state legislature. Federally speaking, I'm encouraged by the fact that we have a coalition working here in Washington, D.C. amongst all the drug policy reform groups and the ACLU on a bill that I would describe as a alcohol prohibition-like bill, meaning that we are literally taking the 1930s laws that made alcohol legal again and introduce that into the Congress, which in effect would allow states that if they want to legalize marijuana in the same way that each state controls their own alcohol sales, that would allow the states to do so.
Wow, it'd be quite different than what we're looking at today. We've got a lot of folks in our chat room as well that have questions about what's happening in law reform right now. Coming up at 1:45, we've got a discussion with the folks from Tax Cannabis that we recorded on Thursday with regards to the citizen initiative to legalize marijuana in California. And some folks were asking when California re-legalizes marijuana in November, what happens to all the people that are currently incarcerated for marijuana in California?
Good question. There is nothing that, as far as I know, that in the text of the submitted initiative language, that there's anything about letting prisoners out or reparations or anything such. There have been similar clauses in legalization efforts in the past, notably in Alaska 3 to 4 years ago. Had Alaskans passed the initiative up there, it would have swung the doors open immediately to those who had gone to prison for cannabis-only related offenses and would have actually provided reparations in some cases. So that doesn't seem to be in play in the language that Richard Lee and others have proffered. However, it seems really logical that if this were to pass, one of the first money-saving, compassion, moral things to do in California is to immediately review the ledger to figure out how many people are in jail for cannabis-only related offenses and let them out immediately.
Yeah, you'd think that would make sense. And I'm thinking once that California does pass re-legalization, it'll just seem, you know, such a grave injustice to keep people in prison if that's the only reason they're there. We're speaking with Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of Normal in Washington, D.C., and we're just previewing what's going on in marijuana legalization and other reforms throughout the country. And we had some news, unfortunately, from Virginia that they have tabled their bills. Where has marijuana law reform gotten stymied so far this year?
Certainly Virginia is the state that immediately came out and did not move forward. I don't think there's many other states that have met such a quick end. I think many of us who observe what goes on in Hawaii realizes that many bills are introduced every session in Hawaii and very few pass. So I don't know that many of these are going to move forward in Hawaii. But Washington State has already had a decriminalization and a legalization bill heard at the subcommittee level. And while the Speaker of the House doesn't seem very keen on them moving and assigns them to committees he knows they'll die, there could be a chance with a reinvigorated effort by Normal, Washington State Normal, the Civil Liberties Union up there, to get at least the decriminalization bill back for a second hearing and potentially to pass this year. Legalization in Washington seems quite dead.
That's too bad to hear. You're in Washington, D.C., of course, and they passed a medical marijuana initiative in 1998. Just recently, the appropriations bill has gotten passed to allow D.C. to go forward with that medical marijuana. What is the state of Washington, D.C. medical marijuana, and are we looking at dispensaries anytime soon?
The 11th of February will be the first city council hearing. Normal will be testifying, of course. And this will be the first of what could be many public hearings. There will be many, many versions of a bill changed. There's already one introduced. There are many things that reformers like Normal don't like about the bill. And we certainly feel pretty strongly that we can influence it, along with MPP, DPA, ASA, the Civil Liberties Union, and a whole bunch of other drug policy reform groups based in Washington, D.C., that we have a very good opportunity, as many of us are D.C. residents ourselves, to actually be involved in these negotiations. And so, yes, there will be dispensaries in the District of Columbia. My guess is they probably will not be open until about the 1st of September, maybe sooner if the council moves quickly.
All right, that looks good. We got some questions coming in here on the chat room for Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal, and a chatter going by the name of Zona2 asks about medical marijuana and the way that it is taking hold and now, you know, spreading to some East Coast states. Do you see medical marijuana in any way taking away people's attention or efforts toward the fight for full legalization for all people?
Yes and no. yes, it does take away the efforts, particularly when you're lobbying legislators, because when you're lobbying them, they tend to only want to focus on one subject matter. They don't really appreciate the nuances here between decriminalization, legalization, medical marijuana. Medical marijuana enjoys by far the most amount of support in this country, politically speaking. So for the last 10 years, medical marijuana has clearly been at the vanguard, and decriminalization and legalization had to take somewhat of a back seat. Bittersweetly, these crushing economic times we're all living through have really sharpened politicians and their staff's attention on the economics of decriminalization and legalization, which is why I think a number of states have introduced those bills, and many more will in the ensuing years. So, yes, in the short run, medical marijuana does take away some of the effort and attention that otherwise would be poured only into decriminalization and legalization. But there can be a good argument made that we probably wouldn't have as much support for decriminalization if we hadn't had, in the case of California, 13 years. One out of eight Americans live in the state of California. So as they have become used to, as they have matured with medical cannabis, it logically follows that they're also keen on legalization, which they are the state in the country that supports it the most.
All right. Another question coming in from the Blues Guy, who wants to know about the states that have dormant medical marijuana laws because they rely on the word prescription. And is there any effort or what could we do to revive those dormant laws?
Very good question. In the 1980s and early 90s, 36 of the 50 states passed what I describe as memorializations, or sort of dead letter law bills that were not effective if either they relied on the federal government to reschedule marijuana, or, as the emailer indicates, uses the death word prescription in this legislature. Because for those not in the know, a doctor can recommend cannabis, that's a First Amendment right, but to prescribe cannabis, or to prescribe any one of 400,000 pharmaceuticals in the United States, that is an interface between the Drug Enforcement Agency and the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. So what has to be done in the future in states, notably Virginia, is legislation has to be passed that changes simply the word from prescription to recommendation. However, as you indicated earlier, Russ, we have the bill tabled in Virginia this past week, despite us bringing to the sponsor's attention the fact that he himself, a pharmacist, wrote the bill, and he felt very strongly that the word prescribed needed to be in there. But we let him know that no one in Virginia will be able to actually get cannabis because there is no prescription. There's no legal source for it. The FDA hasn't allowed it. So it's so important that we change the words from prescription to recommendation in every state where it's applicable.
Would rescheduling of marijuana down below Schedule 1 into Schedule 2 through 5 make a difference for that?
Only if they were to say that they were doing it effectively and not to rely on the federal government first doing it. And if I'm not incorrect, every single state that rescheduled marijuana from 1 to 2 or 3, they all do it reliant upon the federal government first changing the laws, because frankly speaking, and if the Supreme Court decisions of 2001 and 2005 are meaningful, that is the law. We've only had a change of administration, both in Congress and in the executive branch, that has allowed for, if you will, a reinterpretation of the law. No medical marijuana laws have changed whatsoever here at the federal level, but clearly with the Democratic Congress 2 years ago coming in, and 4 years ago, and the Obama administration coming in now, that they have decided to take slightly take their hand off the weight that the federal government has unfortunately put upon the states.
Well, time for one more question with Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. This one comes from New Jersey Leaper, and he wants to know about, I believe he's talking about the Senator Webb crime bill, the Federal Crime Committee. Any estimated time on that?
No, other than Mr. Webb and his cohorts are very keen to keep moving this bill, and they seem to have broad bipartisan support. And as Normal had been agitating from the beginning of Obama's administration, that while we surely want marijuana legalized, no one should doubt that, but in the small political steps it has taken over 40 years almost to get there, commissions, national commission reports are crucial to give politicians at the federal level, media, opinion makers, and other institutions cover, if you will, acknowledging that there need to be these changes, that experts come together and acknowledge there's been changes in technology, changes in culture, changes in the law. And we're very confident that as all other commissions going back to 1888, when the question comes up around marijuana and the law, all commissions always opine that it should be either decriminalized or legalized.
All right. That we'll have to leave it at that.
I wonder how often to change your bong water.
Thanks, Alan.
The most effective method.
My pleasure. Take care.
The best destinations for a ganja getaway. How to hide herb in your car. Whether to grow your own. How precisely to legalize it. Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place. Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
NORMAL stands for Reforming America's Prohibitionist Marijuana Laws, and that cannot happen without directly engaging our government and elected officials. Local NORMAL chapters and other affiliated activists relentlessly lobby our lawmakers for change we can believe in and report on their strategies and progress in this segment we call Our Government at Work.
All right, for our Government at Work segment today, I'm going to be playing you some audio pre-recorded from Thursday. I was happy to be joining many other bloggers in the progressive and the drug law reform community in a conference call with Rebecca Saltzman and Richard Lee and Doug Linney from TaxCannabis2010.org. These are the folks that are putting the legalization initiative on the ballot in California. They just turned in about 700,000 signatures for a ballot initiative that they only needed about 460,000 signatures to get on the ballot. So in November, it looks like California will be voting on legalization. We join the bloggers' conference call in progress.
Whoever wants to ask questions, either of Doug or of Richard, just go ahead and just say your name and what blog or website you're with.
All right. I guess I can get this ball started. This is Russ Belville from the Normal Stash blog. And a question for either gentleman. What does your polling look like so far on this initiative?
We've conducted three polls in putting together the initiative and, of course, have the field poll as well that was contributed just to the polling and also did several focus groups for this. And the results have all been in the same range. There's a clear majority ready to legalize in California. And the range of that is somewhere between 52 and 58%. So we're confident that we're finding, the trend is definitely on the upward side of this as people take a look at the current economic condition and how we're spending government money and things. And the drug war is clearly one of those where people are in vast agreement that it's failing and that we need other solutions. So we're confident that we'll be able to maintain and even drive up those numbers further during the campaign.
Well, yeah, this is Phil Smith from the Drug War Chronicle. I've attended some hearings on the legalization bill in Sacramento, and I was struck by the presence of opposition from black church groups. Are you folks running into that phenomena, and how do you plan on dealing with opposition like that?
Well, we have some groups African-American groups that are interested in supporting the campaign. And we hope to point out how the laws are being enforced against people of race more than other people. That the there's been studies that were just done by the, I think, the Drug Policy Alliance that showed that blacks were being arrested three times as often as whites. And so hopefully we can educate Californians about that and win them over.
I'd also say one of our supporters is the Interfaith Drug Policy Initiative, which is a group of ministers and rabbis and other faith leaders who are on the other side of this as well. That, you know, basically on the side that says, you know, this is that the current prohibition is not right, is causing more problems than it's solving. So I think it will be as the campaign goes on, we'll find ways to include the faith community and win over those that we think that we can get.
Russ Belville here from the Normal Stash blog. Question for Richard Lee. In the testimony that was mentioned earlier up there with the Ammiano bill, a lot of the opponents are coming out with this RAND study that supposedly contradicts the Board of Equalization's finding of a possible $1.4 billion that legalization bill would bring. In a situation where this initiative passes and cannabis becomes a legal substance in the state of California, what do you see happening to the consumer cost for cannabis? And if that declines, do you see that as also having the tax estimates declining for your for what's been proposed here? There's a recent story in the LA Weekly of a dispensary owner who was charging, you know, $37.50 a gram for certain strains. What do you see as happening to the cost and the tax revenues under a legal regime?
Well, I think the cost would come down, but they would the taxes would go up, so overall the price would be down even with the new taxes imposed. But the other thing to remember is not just the direct taxes that would be realized from this, but the indirect jobs and revenue that would be created from legalizing this. We already bring in hundreds of people every month to Oakland, many of them from out of state, for like Oaksterdam University for the classes on cannabis. And so they stay at hotels and buy gas and things like that. And I see tourism and jobs, you know, being indirectly created today. They're opening up a big hydroponic store in Oakland. That's, you know, more jobs and tax revenue that will be generated. So I think, you know, you can't just look at the direct taxes, but you got to think about the indirect also.
Phil Smith, Drug War Chronicle. What do you think it's going to cost you to win this thing? And how is fundraising going?
Well, we hope to raise around $10 million, and we're working with Blue State Digital, Obama's internet fundraising team, internet site team. And so we think we'll be able to raise that money nationally because people know how important this race is. And so if we just get a little bit from a lot of people, we can raise that amount. Doug, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think, there's certain things. It obviously is going to depend on what the opposition turns out to be, but we have a budget between 10 and 15 million that we hope to raise. That's an amount of money that we think gets our message out there, to the voters and again appeals to those people who believe that the drug war has failed and that that regulating cannabis is much better than prohibiting it. So that's going to be our focus. Between the growing cannabis industry, the number one cash crop in California, a national appeal of a movement like this, and many small donors, we feel confident that we can be able to raise that money.
Well, if it's open, Russ Belville from Normal Stash Blog again. In other campaigns to legalize or change marijuana laws on a statewide level, you know, I'm thinking of Nevada in particular, every time this has been attempted, there's been interference at the federal level. Federal drugs are flying in and giving speeches and doing fundraisers and so on. Have you anticipated this possible federal interference, and do you have any strategies to combat it?
Well, they did that for Prop 215, and it didn't work for them. I'm not sure as far as we've come up with exact strategies on how to combat that. But the initiative is written so that it doesn't, so that it won't be thrown out in court because it violates directly with federal law. It doesn't require anybody to break federal law. It doesn't require the state or any city to break federal law. And so we feel confident that it will survive any challenge in court.
Hey, this is Robert Cruikshank from Courage Campaign and Calipix.com, and I'm curious if you guys have been able to get any endorsements from any Republicans or law enforcement officials. I'd like to think that progressive support would be sufficient, but I'm just curious if there's anyone from the other side who has stepped up to embrace this.
Say we're working with Leap Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and go ahead, Doug, I'll let you take it.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, part of the issue here, of course, is that there's still a taboo almost. I don't know how exactly to characterize it, but people are shy about coming out in open support of this type of thing. We're seeing it building. Obviously we have many Republicans that support us, through contributions, small contributions and otherwise, but, you know, they don't advertise necessarily that they're Republican. We also have had discussions with a number of Republican leaders who, you know, quietly say that they support us, but, you know, feel like they would have difficulty being public about that, given the image of cannabis. And the same thing with law enforcement, active law enforcement officers who support this, but can't. So I think that will be one of the challenges of the campaign, certainly. Will be to find enough ways for people to feel comfortable in supporting something that's a significant change from the way people have been thinking about cannabis for a number of years. But many people, we're also surprised at the other hand how many people are willing to come out and support it and who say, oh, this is no big deal that we would otherwise expect. Would still be pretty uptight about the issue. So, it's definitely a challenge. We've been working with LEAP. We're very optimistic. We're also looking, working with a number of retired police officers and sheriffs and others. We'll find that's probably where we'll make our first inroads.
Doug, Russ from the Normal Stash blog again. I've just been thinking, I'm up here in Oregon, and I'm wondering if anyone has thought about the border towns in California near Oregon, Nevada, or Arizona, and what the effect of passing this initiative would be on those border towns. Do you anticipate, perhaps them talking about drug tourism like they do to try to combat the coffee shops in Amsterdam or anything like that? And, every time I go from Oregon to California, I have to get asked about the fruit, whether I'm bringing fruit in. Are we going to have border stations asking whether we're taking weed out of California?
That could happen, yes. But I think other states are going to be following along pretty quickly behind us. We've seen the poll numbers are up in the West generally, and even across the country they're going up. And so I think that's going to be less of a problem as more states legalize.
My first thought is it's not just border towns. We think all California, those cities would choose to opt into this and set up a regulated sales in their cities or counties. That in fact it may be appealing. Again, certain cities will choose to do this, other cities won't. And cities that do, Oakland might be one example where there's been a successful medical marijuana dispensary system that's worked well with the city, and the city collects taxes on it or regulates it, and everybody seems to get along and work well. It attracts people from other parts of the city, from other surrounding cities, surrounding states and states elsewhere. So I think, we expect that California will be an example of how this can be done and be of economic benefit to the state, the local communities.
Fantastic answers, guys. Thanks from Normal Stash Blog. We appreciate it.
Thanks. See you later, Russ.
All right. That was the conference call. A lot of fun there with Richard Lee and Doug Linney from Tax Cannabis 2010. Tomorrow on the show, we'll get another California marijuana report from Eric Brenner. And plus, we'll talk about the TV show The Doctors and their investigation of giving medical marijuana to children to treat autism. We'll also speak with Miko Hester Perez, the mother in question who is giving medical marijuana to her young son to treat autism. I'm Radical Russ. The podcast will be up in a half hour. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Take it out one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.